So, for example, we do the program where you put away a bunch of money each year, a pension plan called cash balance plan. So I had never heard of that. It allowed us to put away, for me personally, $300,000 to $400,000 a year. So what we did was we took out lines of credit, because you never, in my world, I might have 6 paydays a year from the investment banking business. They're big paydays, but I don't know when they're going to be.
One of the most important things I've learned in my life is that a person can achieve all their goals, they can be wealthy, and still not be fully free. As I climbed the wealth ladder and grew a company that was one of the most successful real estate investment companies of its kind here in St. Louis, Missouri, on the outside, I had everything I had dreamed of. The beautiful wife, nicer car than I thought I'd drive, nicer home, beautiful kids. And yet, on the inside, I didn't really feel any different. I still felt, quite frankly, like a slave. I was chasing money. I was chasing my next goal. And when I hit the goal, I wouldn't take the time to celebrate it. And I didn't know how to fully enjoy the journey along the way. So as I've aged, I've gotten curious, you know, how do we make our entire lives wealthy and not just one component of it? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to interview the guests on this show. And yeah, we're going to talk about what they've done and what their stories are and how they've become financially wealthy. But also, I want to dig into their relationship with money and their relationships with other and if they have more joy and fulfillment than when they started out, or if they don't, and why or why not. So thanks for tuning in. We got a great guest coming for you. Let's get started. Hey guys, Jim Manning here with another episode of the Passive Wealth Show. And today we have Kevin Short on the line here. And Kevin has a variety of amazing things going on. If you guys are in the St. Louis area and can listen to KMOX, he has a show called The Business of Family Business. And he's also part of Clayton Capital Partners and has a variety of experience in the investing banking world. And you know what, Kevin? I know your last name's Short, but I think I'm selling you short with this introduction. So I'll leave the rest to you, man. So
no,
thanks for coming on, man.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. And no, that was a nice introduction. So passive income is a big part of my life. So you go back, I'm just a punk kid that grew up in North County and got married in 1980 and had no money and literally had to return all of our wedding gifts to get the deposit to rent our first office in 1980. So we were that broke.
So you,
and over the year, pardon me?
Your wife let you return the gifts to fund a new
business? You should hire her as an investment advisor, because that ended up being the best investment she ever made. That many times return on her money. And that's a big part of, I think, entrepreneurs miss when they're thinking about starting, is if your spouse is not on board, it's going to be challenging, because starting and running, owning businesses is very difficult. And so if you have a spouse constantly chirping at you about, why don't you do this? Why haven't you made this? Why don't I buy a bigger house? Those are all things that really undermine an entrepreneur, I think.
Oh, so, yeah, that's absolutely correct.
We were fortunate to have met up and built this business. So we started with Clayton Capital. I'd been part of some other investment banking firms. And in 2001, we started Clayton Capital about 6 months before 9/11. And not the best timing in the world. So it made it very, the deal business died after we started the business. Paula Reeb was my partner then, is my partner now. She's been there from day one. And we've built a very nice business. And we represent sellers of companies. All of our clients are privately held companies all over North America. We've done Mexico, we've done Canada, California, Washington, everywhere in between. So we've been very fortunate that we figured out how to market and bring in new clients. And what that did was we made our success was a function of our marketing experimentation and just pushing all the time. You understand, that's what you do, Jim.
That's right.
So ultimately, going back 15, 18 years ago, we started generating excess revenues, excess profits. Because up to then, I had four kids in college and all that. It was chewing up all the cash. So when we started developing excess cash, we joined a family office practice at Parkside Bank, and they helped us develop these programs, many of them driven by tax strategies. So, for example, we do the program where you put away a bunch of money each year, a pension plan called cash balance plan. So I had never heard of that. It allowed us to put away, for me personally, $300,000 to $400,000 a year, tax deferred. It was a tax write-off the year I put it in. Well, that was huge. And it was a good discipline. And that was a passive income, passive wealth program, because it allowed me to get big tax write-offs and develop cash investments that have done very well. And then as we had more income over above that, we then got into passive investments. So we've invested in about 40 different passive investments, which could be anywhere from, you know, here locally, it could be Clayco. It's building some big warehouses, looking for investors. Bamboo, which is a private equity fund here locally. We've done four deals with them. Steve Brown or Bulky Brown. So we have a whole bunch of these that we have invested in, and that then generates passive income and capital gains opportunities. And so the idea was to get enough of them. So we have the cash investments, stocks, bonds, et cetera, the cash balance plan, the pension plans. Those are all some form of liquid investments. And then the alternatives were non-liquid into partnerships that own real estate, mezzanine debt, and company ownership, private equity. So that's how that was the strategy. Was as we closed deals, we would take those proceeds and put them into another investment and kept building that up. So that was the strategy.
And then did you come up with a like just a plan where you put in a bucket for taxes, and then like as you closed a big deal, it's like, okay, well, I need to take X percentage and, you know, make sure that I have that liquid and not just put all of that into alternatives, right? And then
no, that would have been too smart. That would have been way too smart. So what we did was we took out lines of credit.
Okay.
And so, because you never, in my world, I might have six paydays a year from the investment banking business. They're big paydays, but I don't know when they're going to be. So, you know, I don't get a paycheck. So, but in the meantime, we had all these investments that required cash, or partnerships required payments periodically. Mm-hmm. And so the lines of credit were there to give me the cash flow in between closings. And then when I close a deal or sell a building or whatever, I then pay down the line of credit.
Gotcha. So that was how you managed it then. Yeah.
Because if I kept waiting for cash, I was going to miss out on too many opportunities. And you never knew when the cash was going to come. So I had enough assets that I could get the lines of credit to keep investing even when I didn't have cash.
Gotcha. Well, that's fantastic. So then you've invested into some of these alternatives. It sounds like it was networking, like just people that you knew through doing what you're doing. And
A little bit. It mostly came from the family office advisors.
Okay.
They were bringing... Elmtree is they're a general partner. They put together deals. I'll give you an example of a passive deal. So they raise about $650 million cash mm-hmm. from investors, and each investor has to put in $10 million. Well, $10 million for one unit for me is too rich. So my advisor put together 10 guys with $1 million each, and they bought one unit. And so we did that three different times. So I can't afford those kinds of risks unless I break it up into two, you know, more bite-sized pieces. So that fund happens to be across the street, but it came through my advisor. He had known them, they had vetted them. Some of the others came from people I knew. I like to invest local, particularly with real estate.
Yeah.
So that's how that happened with the alternatives. And then along the way, we've invested in office warehouses and strip centers and small retail, that type of thing that we do on our own. So diversity is kind of our plan.
So what is it about real estate that you really like to focus on versus some of the other options out there?
Well, I like them all. I like a certain subset. Okay. Like I don't do Bitcoin. I don't do anything that I don't understand. So real estate, I understand. I've been doing it for 40 years. And if you buy good properties and manage them well, and you apply leverage to them, and you use the cash flow to pay off the leverage, that's the model we use. It works very well. So in my real estate holdings, I don't take any money out of that. I let it accumulate and pay down the acquisition debt. And that's what's saved the day over the years, by paying down that debt as quickly as possible.
So if you do run into that a difficult time, you're so under leveraged that it
correct
the impact yet.
Yeah, I'm not worried today about the banks foreclosing on my properties because I've paid the loans down so much or paid them off. If it's paid off, I might use it as collateral for another loan, so you know, to keep going and keep buying. The hardest thing with the acquisitions and the investing we do is having enough cash. So the lines of credit, either just in general or lines of credit against the building, is the way that we funded our acquisitions.
Well, that's fantastic. So, well, let's get into a little bit on the business side of things. So you're doing the investment banking, and I mean, you said something interesting that you figured out some marketing and you're pretty busy now. So, how'd you get into the niche that you're in now, and what would you define it as? Like what size companies are you working with, et cetera?
Yeah, we grew into that because we started off selling small companies.
Okay.
You know, a million or two. And then we studied a lot of marketing models, and we began to experiment. So our marketing success is a function of experimenting. So I don't know much about marketing technically. Don't have any education in it. We just experimented, captured the data to see what worked, did a lot of email blasting. Our premise was, how can we market without spending a whole bunch of money till we figure out if it works? So email blasting was the best way to do that. And then over time, we grew into bigger and bigger commitments.
So guys, just that is a really powerful statement. Just if those of you that are business owners listening in, I don't know, Kevin, if you know this, I know this from experience. Like we started spending 20, 30 grand a month on direct mailings to do deals. And we were excited about all the deals we were doing. Then we looked at our P&L at the end of the year and said, whoa, we've just been really busy. Our
right.
profit margin's not near what we wanted
right.
to be. Did you experience anything like that? Or did you always just?
Yeah. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
When we started the firm, we started with some advertising in the Business Journal.
Yeah.
Everybody was doing it back then. It was pretty expensive for us. And I did it for a year and a half, and it didn't work at all. And I sat down with the sales rep. I said, we're going to have to stop this. This is crazy. But we have nothing to show for it. She said, well, I want you to try one more thing. And this is where I learned a lot. She said, your next ad, I want you to put your picture in it and your name. Instead of just Clayton Capital Partners, put your name and picture. I said, well, why? I don't want to be Johnny Landoff. I don't want to be selling used cars on the side of the road. She said, people will see you out in a restaurant, recognize you from the ad, they'll come over and talk to you. So you will build brand and what we call buzz. We're always trying to build buzz about the firm. And those pictures every week will begin to build brand and buzz about the firm. And she was dead on. The call started right away from people that knew me or had seen me and said, I saw your ad, that was great. I'd like to talk to you about X, Y, or Z. But the picture caught their attention. So we did that for a number of years until we found other ways to do it that were cheaper. Because
yeah.
The Business Journal got to be very expensive. But that was a very interesting lesson for me, like all of them. It was very, very expensive until we found out a way to do it cheaper. So now the branding we do in the pictures and names, and we sponsor seminars, and we sponsor a lot of things that have a lot of exposure. Like the Business of Family Business, that show. We do a big seminar at the Ritz in May. There'll be 600 people from around town. We're a sponsor and a host. All those things are designed to get Clayton Capital on the stage, on the program, and reinforce it to people so that we there's something in town that comes in town every February, the Dealmakers Conference, and we sponsor that and usually are a keynote speaker. Again, people have seen me speak so many times, eventually when they go to sell, they call. They said, you know, I've heard of you for years and wanted to meet you, and I'd like you to take our company to market. So that is our mantra. We also do a lot of socializing. So I live in an old house in the Central West End that we have. So you're on the board of a charity, give the house to you for a fundraiser. You'll bring your board over, 50 people. You will make a donation to the charity because we don't get paid. We do it for charity, mm-hmm. but the charity makes money off the event because the people who go to the event give money to the charity. Well, we've done a lot of those. We're doing about 20 a year.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's a lot. And we think we've had about 100,000 people come through the house.
And it's your personal residence you're doing this at.
Yes, absolutely.
The neighbors much love you.
Yeah, well, we take care of them.
Yeah. And
my wife loves it. She loves the social aspects of it.
Yeah.
And that has given us another set of people that know us because they've been in our home. And a home's very historic and it makes a great impression. So we're just looking for ways to inexpensively make an impression on people. And then once we capture their name in our database, one of the books I read said you need to be top of mind, which we live and breathe top of mind. And so we reach out and touch everybody every 4 to 6 weeks that's in our database, mostly through emailing. And we're sponsoring another seminar. So they're seeing our brand all over town all the time. That gets reinforced to me constantly, and which is great, Jim, for St. Louis, mm-hmm. but it doesn't do us any good for LA or Kansas City. So we have a different model to build. We build brand in other cities around advisors. So Jim Manning could be an advisor that we've met at a speech I've given or whatever in LA, and we capture your information. One of the costs of getting us out there to give a speech is we need your attendee list and their email addresses. That goes into our database. So you heard me give a speech, and then we will hit you with emails then every few weeks forever. And we've got 500,000 email addresses that we've accumulated that way over time. And that's how we've built the brand up around the country. So we have these pods of advisors who refer people to us. So we don't have any sellers call us very often. It's always through their advisor.
Gotcha. Then like the breadth, the competitive advantage is really the contacts and
the marketing.
How many people you can market it to.
And not spend a fortune experimenting. As you know, marketing is very expensive. You don't want to spend a fortune before you figure out it doesn't work.
That's right. So, first and foremost, thanks for all these great insights and hopping on the show and sharing everything with
sure,
us.
Sure, I love doing. I love marketing.
Yeah. So, is there anything else from your main core business that you'd like to share or actually, I tell you what, let me take that question back. Let me ask you a better one. Are there any trends with business owners that you find that like, man, this is like your bread and butter. It's who you can really serve at a high level. Like,
yeah.
What commonalities are there?
Yeah, that is one that developed quickly for us in the beginning. So I'm a business owner, right? And I always have been from right out of school. And my clients are business owners. They're not corporate America. They're not private equity. They are business owners just like I am that have pulled themselves up by the bootstraps and have done very, very well. And that's who we relate to. So when I'm marketing to them, we speak the same language. I'm not a Harvard grad coming in trying to razzle dazzle them. I'm a St. Louis guy, and they like that. Even if they're in, we have a new client up in Pennsylvania. He loves the fact we're from the Midwest. And people really glom onto that. So that is very important to our model, that our clients are all privately held companies, family-owned businesses, and they're looking for somebody to help them sell the business and have their biggest payday ever.
How big has your team grown to now?
So we have a different model. So I do all the deal making,
okay,
which is unusual because most investment banking firms grow through adding investment bankers. We couldn't find investment bankers that would do it the way we want to do it. So we said, all right, let's go the other way. Let's take everything off my plate. It's admin related. And the only thing left on my plate is marketing, finding new clients, and closing the deals. Everything in between is done by my partner. And she has a staff of 13, 14 people that help her do that. So it's a very unusual model. But it's, think of a heart surgeon. All he does is walk into the room and make a couple of cuts and he walks out. That's right. All I do. That's all I do. My partner does all the heavy lifting and her team.
Yeah, then you're there for the when the negotiations and
yep.
and all the communications to make sure the deal happens. Yeah. All
correct.
So then you, where do you see yourself going forward with this thing, man? Like it doesn't feel like you're slowing down at all. It seems like you're
no, not at all. We've started a couple of companies in the last year. A commercial real estate brokerage, because we were struggling with that, finding the right brokerage, and also real estate management. I work 7 days a week, and I love it because it's all different. The weekends, I'm out looking at properties and reviewing construction projects, and Monday through Friday, it's mostly M&A. So I like all that. I've studied the concept of retirement a lot for me.
Okay.
And it doesn't make any sense. And so my, you know, you hear people saying they don't know what they would do. Well, I don't know what I would do. And why would I change something that's, you know, I found the golden goose. Why would I stop it now? So I'm going to keep going until my health fails. And then I'll cut back at that point and close it.
So do you love what you do more? Like, are you more having more fun doing what you're doing than like if you're on the golf course or something like that?
I stopped playing golf 15 years ago for that reason.
Yeah.
I'm so excited that the business is working so well that I don't take vacations. I don't play golf. I don't play tennis anymore. I've got stuff to do and it's working really well. So all those things I did, vacations, my kids came to me after a ski trip to Vail and said, Dad, sit down. We want to show you some pictures. It's pictures of me on the slopes and skiing or standing on my skis on a cell phone. They had a whole bunch of them. Yeah. So, Dad, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm doing deals to pay for this trip. So eventually I made a deal with the whole team. I said, I'm not going to go on vacations anymore, but you guys can go anywhere you want. Yeah, because I don't relax on vacations. It makes me crazy. And I'd rather stay here and work on the business I've built my whole life because I really enjoy it.
How many years did it take to really? So you mentioned like, hey, I got into like you got connected with the Parkside guys and like, you know, you're really able to start socking away some big checks, right? And like
right.
turn around and invest. How many years of being a business owner was that till you really were like, man, this is a golden goose now. I've really hit on
that. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
I trace it back to October of 2006.
Okay.
We closed a $3 million fee. That was the first time I'd ever been over $1 million for one closing for our fee. And that kind of woke me up to like, well, that owner and I got along really well. He's just a regular guy. Why don't I go get more of him? So we changed our marketing. So that's when my ability to invest and do all the fun things I like to do started at that point.
So, okay. So
we'd been in business for 5 or 6 years.
So 2006,
right. That was
18 years ago. And you said you've been a business owner for 40 years. Didn't you say that?
Yeah, different businesses, but Clayton Capital, which has been the golden goose, started in 2001, but it didn't really get going till 2006.
So really you had a 20-year span as an entrepreneur who had some successes, but not really like at that.
Not point. Really. Yeah. I was banging out a living and putting four kids through school.
Yeah. So, you know, and to me, this circles back to Kevin, what you started with. And I think it merits us bringing this back up again. That your wife supported you and you guys sold all of the wedding gifts to get the business going. And then it was a 20-year span to where it really started paying off. Like, yeah, you were paying the bills and everything the whole time, right? But
right.
really getting the fruits of your labor. And we see I just see so many people that want it easy and they want this overnight success. And then they
it was very difficult. Yeah. I worried about, you know, sometimes I couldn't pay the kids' tuition. We worried about everything financially those first 10 years for sure till I started to figure it out.
Yeah. And then you, You know, and then like, and it can be confusing, guys, because like you look at the Kevin Shorts of the world and you say, oh my gosh, look at what he's done and look what he's doing. I mean, he has a KMOX show and he's got 500,000 people in his database to market businesses to. So if a client signs up, he can provide a crazy amount of value. And it's like, well, yeah, that's true. And, you know, he had a 20-year span that laid the foundation that formed him into the business person he needed to be. Regardless if it was the same business or not. And, you know, like it's not something that, you know, had you just the first time adversity struck, had you just like, you know, like you kept going, you didn't just stop at that point and throw in the white flag and go find something else. You kept going. And how did you, on those days when you were really struggling and really just having to kind of grind without the results you wanted, how did you stay motivated, do you think, like looking back?
Well, no, I'm very clear how that happened by accident. On bad days, I'm a big believer in something called mind mapping.
Okay.
So on bad days, I sit down and put together a mind map and plan my way as to what we're going to do tomorrow. You know, yes, today was a disaster, lost a lot of money, but I go to work immediately planning the next project, the next how we're going to come out of this. And that keeps me positive because I like doing that. And it keeps me from dwelling on the loss. So I've always done that. I've always, you know, I'll lick my wounds for half a day and then I go to work figuring out how we're going to come out of this.
Wow, that's great. And then
I don't know how or why I learned that, but I've always done that.
And then I don't hear much fear from you on like any sort of economic shift or anything like that. Like, and being that you've been doing this for 40 years as a business owner, like, I mean, you've seen all the markets, I think, right? Like, I mean, maybe there's one you haven't seen yet, but I mean, most economic cycles don't, you know, happen quicker than a 40-year span, right? So, what have you learned on that front to where you don't necessarily operate out of a place of fear and you can really just rock and roll regardless of the market and have that confidence? What do you think?
Yeah, I learned to manage my greed. And diversify like crazy. So, and be okay with 10% returns, even though sometimes we're getting 20s, 30s, and 40%, be okay with 10 and focus on return of capital and focus on income, not swing for the fences every day. That's a very dangerous plan. It's one of the things that got me in trouble early in my career, swinging for fences every day. And so I learned to temper that and to diversify. So all those investments I talked about, that's just part of it. I've diversified far and wide. We've got VC investments. We've got all kinds of equities, all in different markets. You know how that works to diversify. So I don't really worry about, no one market can take me down. Mm-hmm. You know, real estate market, which has softened the last 18 months, but all my buildings are full. So I'm not affected by the higher interest rates. And we had long enough maturities on the loans, they haven't affected us. I'm holding my breath that the rates come back down by the time those loans renew. But in the meantime, I'm paying down the principal so I could always renew it and pay down and just take out a smaller loan. So I worry about this a lot.
Yeah,
I don't want to go back to
a crazy amount because of how you
I don't want to go back to being poor. Been there, done that, hated it. It's depressing. So I'm more worried about preservation of the capital than I am about doubling it overnight.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. Like, you know, if I put $100 into something and I lose half of it, that's a 50% loss.
Right.
But now I have $50 and I have to double my money, have 100% gain just to get back to break even. You know, so like
most people don't.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, most people don't get that. And they fall for every scheme that comes along. And I don't do that.
Yeah, and you know, there's a time and place for a piece of your net worth
to go
after like a big VC deal or whatnot. But
which we do. We do a small amount in VC.
But like, you know, that's like there's something to be said about just having a foundation. And yeah, especially the older I get, the more conservative I get too. And maybe it's something about having a little bit, you know, I started out with a $0 net worth and, you know, having a few more zeros to my name nowadays. And
yeah, you have more to lose. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but you know, I don't. So if you started, you know, if you gave yourself like advice on, you know, like that first 20 years, if you could go back and, you know, say, hey, you know, talk to your old self and say, hey, let's do this in 5 years, not 20.
Right.
Like, what would you have done differently? Like, what held you, like as an entrepreneur, like what held you back in the early years versus like how you do things now? What do you think?
I was so scared I wasn't going to make it. That was a real fear of mine at that age, which had been my early to mid 20s. I was so afraid I wasn't going to make it. I was out making investments out of fear that I wasn't going to have money. So I was making dumb investments. So that was, and then when I look back on it, I'm like, well, it was obvious that was not going to work. But I was so enamored with making a lot of money that I made a lot of bad investments. It took me that 10 years to dig out of all that.
So it was the not being able to like control the fear.
Yeah, I didn't have enough confidence that I was going to make it. If somebody told me I was going to end up here, I would have been a lot more relaxed back then and not made a lot of dumb investments. Uh-huh. It's kind of like, you know, you see people go out and buy shares of or buy a gold mine, or they get into some kind of Ponzi scheme trying to get rich overnight.
Yeah.
And it blows up in their face. It's along the same lines.
Yeah, that's right. I was just talking to somebody the other day that they got quoted, I mean, I think double the returns of what our debt fund does. And I told them, like, well, hey, we've been doing this for 18 years and we pay a really quality return. And I know how difficult it is on our end to make a profit with the returns we're giving people.
Yep.
And like, and then they're trying to give you double. It's like, I mean,
overnight. Yep.
I mean, you can, you know, there, maybe if you're lying or cheating or stealing or something, you can give people that return, but you know, most likely doesn't end well, you know? So, that's right. So, well, hey, if anyone's listening to this and maybe has a business that they're interested in selling or getting kind of assessed in value or, you know, like what's a good way to get a hold of you, Kevin? Like, what do you recommend?
Yep. So it's Clayton Capital Partners, 314-725-9939. Our email is kshort@claytoncapitalpartners.com. Those are the best ways.
Well, Kevin, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, this has been great. I've really enjoyed it, Jim.
And yeah, Kevin and I found out recently we had a few mutual friends and I feel like I should know you better. So like this is hopefully the start of a new friendship. And
I hope so.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. And guys, thank you for tuning into the show and we'll see you next time. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks.
All right, guys, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have a website, passivewealthshow.com, where you can get more great content and resources. We offer a passive profit strategy session, and you can find that on our website as well, where we'll basically ask you a bunch of discovery questions and help you figure out if investing passively is a good thing for you or not. So go to our website, passivewealthshow.com, and we'll go from there.